Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about Resident Evil, the first film. Based on the video games.
Yes.
Released in 2002.
Long time ago.
With the gorgeous, the wonderful, what's her name?
Meredith knows. It's Mila Jovovich.
I'm recreating a moment that we messed up earlier.
Ew.
And Michelle Rodriguez and some other randoms.
Some other folks.
But before we get into it,
we didn't even talk about it,
but we do have a special guest and lover of these movies.
I thought you were like saying your lover, and I was like, Meredith, don't make it weird.
And lover of me. Victor, our engineer, and my husband. I was like, my boyfriend? That's wrong. Fiance?
Hello. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah.
I know. I think last time I was on this, we weren't even married.
No, you weren't. Because
probably accurate, yeah.
You joined us for Bram Stoker's Dracula, but then our Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
That episode might have been the last one you were on.
Yeah, and that was like 8-9 months ago.
So long ago.
I know. Yeah,
time flies.
And then he learned we were doing virus movies, and then Resident Evil was a possibility, and he was like, oh, I want to be on that.
Mm-hmm.
So was not invited, but here I am.
I said, fine.
She's like, I guess it's been 8 or 9 months.
Sure, okay. So I guess we can ask you, Victor, what's new with you? Don't take mine.
Well, since the last time you guys heard from me, I got married.
Really? Congratulations.
Yeah, it's pretty
How's
sweet.
It going?
Who did you trick?
some broad. Yeah. You know. She's cute, though. I guess I'll keep her.
Is she spooky?
She is.
Oh, perfect.
Very spooky.
Match made in heaven.
Yes.
Or hell.
Blood orphans.
And stop me if I'm saying yours, but we decorate our house for Halloween.
No, that wasn't going to be mine.
That's always fun every year. The kids.
There's always so much to do.
Yeah. One of the kids always enjoys it. The other one pretends like he's going to hate it and doesn't want to do it and then has a good time.
And then he's like all in. And the other one who asked about it for weeks and weeks is like slightly helping, but not really.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Okay.
Kids are weird.
Children are a mystery. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are we doing this? I'm so excited. Hey, do you want to participate in this? Because you've been asking about I'm eating an apple.
That was literally an excuse.
I'm right. Very important and
I'm
busy.
Very busy right now.
But this year, the newest decoration that I really enjoyed was I bought a skeleton, like a 6-foot skeleton, and I brought out our Weber kettle grill.
That we're just done using?
That we haven't used in I don't know how long.
So you don't really care if someone steals it off your lawn?
No,
I mean, it's the hope it doesn't, but we won't be heartbroken.
Yeah. And so I attached the skeleton to the grill using...
zip ties?
No, I used a little, I needed something a little stronger.
Okay.
And so I used wire hangers that I cut up and like twisted around different parts to keep him
upright.
All
right.
And so he's got one of his skeleton hands on the lid,
mm-hmm.
like he's about to open it, and the other one has got some tongs.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got an apron and a sweet hat.
So it's a slightly crafty decoration on your part.
Yeah, I was very proud of it. Yeah, I was very proud of it. If there was a website, I would post a picture. Oh, you have an Instagram.
Yes.
I will send you a photo and you can put it on the Instagram.
Absolutely.
So that people can look and like it and say how much they're really happy that I'm on this episode.
And that would be really good because I have not posted on the Instagram account, this is confession time, since we were doing our M. Night Shyamalan project.
Katie.
Before your honeymoon.
Katie.
I know. I'm so ashamed.
That was like 4 months ago.
That was a really long time ago.
You just ran
and at the beginning of every episode, it says, follow us on Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
You're just imbibing when champagne.
And it was Prosecco.
It's like a tick now that I've seen Schitt's Creek. I have to call everything champagne.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's pretty much what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's new with Katie?
Well, actually, I wasn't thinking of mentioning this, but if we are going to be sharing like crafty Halloween decoration pictures, this is one that I didn't make recently. I made it over. I had it on my list to do over the summer when I had free time, because a couple years ago I made a decoration where I bought off Amazon like these just like unpainted, unfinished wooden arrow, like signpost arrows.
Yeah.
And it was a pack of six. And so I did six different horror movie locations and like made them all different colors and different designs and everything. And so it was like, the first one was like Haddonfield, Elm Street, Bates Motel, Camp Crystal Lake, Amityville, and then The Further were the six that I did the first time. And
that's
then
super cool.
I was like really, really into it, really proud of the first product. But it kind of bugged me. Like I had picked The Further kind of randomly because I couldn't think of a good sixth one. And then after I made it, I was like, oh, I should have put Derry, Maine on there.
Doesn't that happen sometimes?
Yeah, I had that on my to-do list for a really long time to repaint The Further one to make it Derry. But then I hadn't done it and hadn't done it. And then I remember I was talking to my class about it last year. And they started being like, you should do this, you should do this. And like giving me some actually really good suggestions of other ones I hadn't done. So I ended up over the summer making a whole other set. Mm-hmm. And so the second set has the Overlook Hotel. It has Derry, Maine. It has Woodsboro, I think. And I did, what were some of the, oh, the Upside Down. Mm-hmm. And I can't, there would be two more, and I can't remember what the other two are. But,
well, now you can make another one and put Raccoon City on it.
Yeah, but that's the big debate with these virus movies is, are they horror? And so few of the Resident Evil movies take place in Raccoon City.
True.
So, but nice attempt to try tie us back in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Tie everything together.
Mm-hmm. So we've already covered Halloween decorations in all their glory. What's new with you, Meredith?
Fog Fest in Pacifica is in full swing today as well. It started yesterday. And there was the parade yesterday, and the Pacifica School District was the grand marshal of the parade. And they kept asking employees to walk in it, and I was like, eh, no.
I don't walk.
I don't do that. I don't
celebrate.
But then I ended up doing it, and it was pretty fun. A lot of my friends went to, like, Tiffany and several other people took part. And Victor somehow, I was, like, bamboozled him into walking with us. And then he ended up somehow holding the Ortega sign.
Of course.
And then he was wearing his Dodgers hat, and people were, like, shouting and yelling at him.
NL West champs, baby.
Yeah, people were, like, yelling at him on the parade route, yelling at him to take his hat off.
And that's
like,
problematic.
But the funny
were booing
thing is,
teachers.
But the funny thing is, they didn't know if he was a teacher or not, so they're essentially yelling and booing a teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
great. For those of you who don't know, I am not a teacher. However, I was a teacher for that 40 minutes as we walked down. Mm-hmm.
You've done plenty of unpaid labor in my classroom,
which is
fixing
the
cabinets and other people's cabinets or other classrooms.
Yeah.
And there's nothing helping that makes you a teacher more than unpaid labor.
Indeed.
Yeah. He literally drilled a piece of cabinet that was falling apart. I put a work order in it for it, and it wasn't fixed. And then they came and fixed it, in quotes, wink, wink. And then it popped out immediately. And I was like, actually my boyfriend, and I, will you please help me with this nonsense? Because this is really annoying, and it feels not great.
Well, what's super frustrating about that is that it literally, like, it took me 3 minutes to fix a cabinet that had previously been, quote, fixed. And it's like, what were you doing?
Yeah.
What were you doing? Like, I'm not an expert in these matters.
How did you fix this without fixing it?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell did you even do? Because it took me about 3 minutes to look at it and go, oh, I just need to do this and it will be steady and stable forever.
And
now it is.
It's been a year and a half and it's still great.
Yeah, it's so stupid. I'm like, what the hell are you doing?
In any case, he earned his walking rights.
Yes.
I feel like.
Absolutely. He deserved to be in that parade.
Yeah. So it was really fun and we walked around and then this one booth had all these like wooden signs that were really cool and all sorts of like funny quotes or like weird franchises, but then like a spins on the franchise, like what, like bathroom signs with like Darth Vader being like, use the force, and he's like sitting on the toilet. It was like really funny. So I didn't get any of those signs, but there were two that were like Universal Monsters, like of the old kind of posters. So I got two of the wooden signs made by somebody, and so that was really fun. And we just walked around, and then it was like foggy, which I enjoy because usually when we have to go, it's really sunny and hot and gross.
Yeah, it's very ironic that Bogfest is almost always sunny.
Yeah. So I was actually enjoying myself, not covered in a layer of sweat and grime.
Yes.
By the end, we walked around for like 5 hours and then came home, and it was nice. It was a nice day and perfect weather, at least for the vampire that I am.
Yes.
But it was fun because I had some books to hand out. And so I saw some of my students and previous students and I was like, hi. Mm-hmm. And then like gave them a book and they're like, oh my gosh. And it was sweet. It was a sweet, sweet moment.
She's basically a celebrity. People know her.
Yeah.
At least for those few minutes, I was very popular.
Well, that's the nice thing about teaching younger kids as opposed to older kids, because like high schoolers will pretend they don't know you in public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the little kids are like, just their minds are blown. They could not be more excited to see their teacher out in the world.
They're like, oh my gosh.
She's real.
She doesn't live at school under her desk.
Right? She broke through the force field that keeps her on campus.
I know. So that was really fun. Then that's my what's new. Aside from that, I've been watching lots of spooky stuff and listening to spooky podcasts. And I did finish that book.
Oh, fantastic.
Incidents Around the House.
Yeah, the one that you can't lend to me because it's a library book?
It's a library book, sorry. I ended it, and I realized this is an interesting tie-in for our next movie, which is Bird Box.
Wrong.
A movie we're doing at some point.
Yes, I think if people are paying attention, they can tell that we've recorded these episodes out of order.
Sorry.
But that's okay.
Yeah. So at some point, we're doing that movie, but he also wrote Bird Box and then this movie, or excuse me, this book as well, which I didn't actually know until I read it and saw his name as like, he also wrote this. And I was like, oh, well, I'll be damned. But
kiss my grits.
The way it ended was kind of, it was okay.
Yeah.
But it was really pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I'd recommend it, but.
Nice.
Okay, so
we'll get the show on the road because we've got some material.
Mm-hmm. Are you ready? Let's go.
Because I love this movie franchise. I very, very deep and abiding love. I own all of them on DVD. I've seen them all many, many times. And I know that Victor, because he invited himself onto this episode, must also have some very strong positive feelings towards this franchise.
Do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I saw this first one, I think, I want to say 2 or 3 times in the theater, mm-hmm. and then subsequently many, many times.
See, and I had never seen any of these until I think the first 4 had already come out, because I grew up with a disdain for video games, because when we got our first Nintendo when we were kids, my brothers would never let me play. And so I responded by being like, well, video games. That's stupid. I don't want to play anyway. And that carried me through the rest of my life. To this day, I'm very disdainful of video games. And so, you know, with Resident Evil, I'm like, it's a video game movie.
It's a little scary.
Well, to be fair, most video game movies are absolute trash.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, I know it's a disdain from your childhood trauma from your brothers,
but
it's pretty much true
that
most are terrible.
Yeah.
I still like almost all of them, but I know that most of them are terrible.
Not quality, yeah. And so anyway, I wasn't until, like I said, I think the first 4 of these had already come out that I finally watched any of them and realized like, oh my God, I fucking love these movies. And so then I saw the 2 final sequels, Retribution and Final Chapter. I did see those in the theater. But anywho, to get in, the first one released in 2002 and starring, as Meredith mentioned, Mila Jovovich and other familiar faces, but not necessarily familiar names aside from Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And then throughout the franchise, there are some other familiar faces get peppered in there in the other films that are really great. And I was so embarrassed when we did Final Destination and we were talking about Ali Larter. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention or that, you know, we're like, oh, she was in this and she was in this. And I did not mention the Resident Evil franchise. I mean, she's not in this first movie, but she's in several of the sequels. Anyhow, so it opens with text on screen saying confidential report subject to the events leading to the incident at Raccoon City. At the beginning of the 21st century, the Umbrella Corporation has become the largest commercial entity in the United States. 9 out of every 10 homes contain its products.
Pfizer. Sorry. Okay, continue.
That's okay. That was absolutely relevant. Its political and financial influence is felt everywhere. In public, it is the world's leading supplier of computer technology, medical products, and healthcare. Unknown even to its own employees, its massive profits are generated by military technology, genetic experimentation, and viral weaponry. And so almost all of the movies begin with some sort of like disclosure informational nugget like this. Later on, they're largely Alice's statements. But, you know, they give you this setting that I imagine, you know, links to something similar in the video game itself to give you the context of the game. But in our film, we zoom in on a lab where a hazmat-suited individual uses robotic arms to handle vials of blue and green serum. They're placed in a case with a device to administer the serum, and after closing up the case, the individual flings one of the blue vials across the room, where it breaks just as they seal the door behind them. Vapors rise from the spilled serum and drift into a nearby vent that leads us to a corporate hallway. One man bumps another and spills his coffee as he hurries by, and the now soiled guy boards an elevator with other employees. In another room, Dobermans in cages begin barking. Excuse me, I'm going to have to sniff now. You can edit those out. As you see fit, there's going to be a lot of them today. Security cameras catch sight of the broken vial on the floor and registers a biohazard warning, sounding an alarm and sealing doors right and left and freezing the elevator. Sprinklers are activated in a sealed lab and it begins to fill with water as one employee shouts at the camera that there's no fire. Occasionally, we see the camera readout measuring all sorts of data, including physiological readings of the people it's observing. So obviously, it's a very high-tech, computerized security system. People in the elevator begin to freak out, then they begin to fall, but not all the way. Elsewhere, a large sealed area of the building is suddenly inundated with gases spewing from the ceiling, and all the people, including one particular blonde that we'll see again later, collapse to the floor. Back at the elevator, the people on board, they force the door open, and they see the floor littered with bodies outside. Only open a bit, one woman starts squeezing through the gap and gets stuck with her head out. The car falls a bit, but she's okay. Then the car reverses, and she's decapitated by the top of the frame of the elevator door.
And she's like, I can make it. I'm like, I think your like arm can, but yeah, like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, like your hips are not going to...
I know you're size zero, but come on.
Yeah, you have a skeleton.
Your bones can't squeeze.
Yeah, you're not a jellyfish.
Like, yeah.
I mean, it is a pretty satisfying scene, though, to like just start off this franchise with someone getting, you know, decapitated by an elevator.
Absolutely.
That's pretty good. I liked it.
It really sets you up for what's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so now we cut to a close-up of a gorgeous aquamarine eye, and we zoom out to an equally gorgeous strawberry blonde waking up from apparently collapsing in the shower.
Yum, 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 yum.
Mmm. Yeah. Just move that shower curtain a little bit to the side. And don't worry, she does.
I mean, she often, in these movies, you can see her.
Oh, yeah, you get some side boob. You get some...
Yeah, she's not super...
Oh, well, you get some full-on
You see full-on all of her.
Yeah, well, maybe that's in the second one.
No, the second one.
In the tank, you can see her completely naked.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Not in this first one, you just get side boob. But she was, I mean, Mila Jovovich was a supermodel before she became an actress, and she's all...
Well, she's been naked in several movies.
Yeah. And the beginning, I mean, as her career progressed, I think she did less and less of it, which you could kind of understand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, especially there at the beginning. I remember in the Chaplin movie that Robert Downey Jr. made, she played like his youngest wife, like the woman who was like 16 when he married her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was... I think she was only like 14 or 15 when she played the role.
Mm, that's crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, this lady wanders in a daze into an opulent bedroom, and she sees a notepad with "Today, all your dreams come true" written on it. She begins to copy the message and sees that it does not match her handwriting. Going through drawers, she's startled to find one filled with weapons. She puts on an iconic red dress that is laying on the bed and continues through a huge mansion. She sees a framed wedding photo of herself with a dark-haired man, and it's starting to become obvious that she has no memory of any of this. And this is Alice. We actually don't, like, learn her name until much later. It's the case with a lot of characters in the film, but for the purposes of retelling the recap, I'm like, we need their names. So checking outside the mansion, she's spooked by the woods and the wind and is suddenly grabbed from behind and pulled back into the house. She's struggling to get away from whoever grabbed her as flashbangs fly through the windows and SWAT team in gas masks rappel through. The guy who grabbed her, Matt, is tackled and handcuffed as one SWAT comes to Alice and demands, "I want your report, soldier." And she replies, "I don't know what you're talking about." Another SWAT calls out, "The house's primary defenses have been activated. She's probably still suffering the side effects." We're like, okay, memory loss. Two SWAT remove their masks and we meet One. So it's kind of confusing because this character's name is actually One. This actor is one of the ones that's kind of familiar looking. His name's Colin Salmon. I love him because he's in Alien vs. Predator. But he's also...
Oh, yeah.
He's in the new 007 movies. The new ones or the... Yeah, I think he's in the Craig 007s. He's in some of the Bond movies.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, you know, you probably wouldn't know his name, but you'd recognize his face. And then Rain is the other one we meet, and that's Michelle Rodriguez. Whose charming first line that she delivers in the movie is "blow me,"
mm-hmm.
Which is all, very indicative of her character throughout the franchise. So the SWAT take Matt and Alice with them as they, quote, prep for entry into the hive, which turns out to be hidden access to a huge staircase that leads downward. Pardon the sniff. At the bottom of the staircase, there's this cavernous room filled with crates and such and a train car. Another SWAT member, Kaplan, sets a giant countdown timer. Then they all board the train. While in transit, they open a jammed door in the train car and a semi-conscious man falls out, whom Alice recognizes as the guy in her wedding photo. Like,
it's
my
lover.
It's my groom. She notes his wedding ring, then takes off her own and sees the inscription inside the ring reads "Property of Umbrella Corporation," which is super romantic.
That is odd.
Yeah. I mean, I have the same thing inside my wedding ring, so. The guy seems fine, but also can't remember who he is, like Alice. And this is Spence. At the end of the train ride, the team approaches an entry point, and we see the computer monitoring them like before. But before they actually enter, Alice finally demands to know what's going on. One tells her, "You and I have the same employer. We all work for the Umbrella Corporation. The mansion above us is an emergency entrance to the hive. You are security operatives placed there to protect it. Your marriage is fake, just part of your cover to protect the secrecy of the hive." When the folks ask what the hive is, they're shown a schematic showing a town called Raccoon City, population 853,200, and the hive below it, which is a top secret research facility owned and operated by the Umbrella Corporation. It houses over 500 staff who live and work underground, completing classified research. The hive also has computer-controlled defense mechanisms, and a nerve gas was released into the house. But when asked if that means the hive was attacked, One says, "I'm afraid it's more complicated than that." At that point, Rain announced that they've gained access into the hive. So they enter and we see the same elevator lobby from the beginning of the film. They proceed down some stairs and Kaplan reports that, quote, "The Red Queen has locked onto us. She knows we're here." And we're like, ooh, now it's Alice in Wonderland.
Uh-oh.
But then One explains that the Red Queen is state-of-the-art AI. She's the computer that controls the hive. Next, they arrive at the water-filled labs, and while Rain and JD go look for an alternate route to where they're trying to get, Spence asks, "What happened here?" And One explains, "5 hours ago, Red Queen went homicidal, sealed the hive, and killed everyone down here. When we realized what was happening, my team was dispatched to shut her down." As he admits that they don't know why she did it, a body drifts into view in the water in the lab. So that's like a very, because it's like murky, like kind of cloudy water. And they can tell that, you know, whatever, that there's room. But then all of a sudden, a body just like floats up to the glass through this murky water. So Alice and Spence bond a bit while they're waiting. And when the team moves on, Rain pauses for a moment at the floating body still in view and goes, "Poor bastards." And then she walks away just before the body's eyes pop open and its hand presses to the glass.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a, you know, kind of a jump scare. But to that point, they were like, oh, this is just somebody that drowned in the water. And then as after they walk away, we see that, oh, they're not dead.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun.
Think that also I was going to say that at the time that Alice AI, or not, is it Alice AI, the Red Queen? No, Alice is... obviously the main character. I meant to say the Red Queen, but I was thinking of the daughter. Anyway. So I got mixed up for a moment because we just watched the other movie. But it just seems so far-fetched and something that technology could never actually do and like beyond anything. But now at this point in 2024, I'm like,
100%.
Because
it's like, it's a sentient computer, basically. Yeah.
And at the time, I was like, wow, that's crazy. Science fiction.
<You know? laughs> Now it's science
fiction. That's crazy. But... I feel like I'm like, ooh, this is kind of interesting to go revisit, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, there are several companies that are very large that are branching off into things that don't make sense.
Yeah. And then maybe there are things going on that we don't know about, like the rest of the world didn't know what Umbrella was actually up to.
Exactly. We'll let you decide what those companies are.
Yeah. Pfizer.
Pfizer. Even Amazon.
Eli Lilly. Jeff Bezos would never do that.
Why would he ever get into healthcare? Oh, wait. Oh. He is.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. All right, continue.
Sorry, folks. Okay. So the team is following another route to the Red Queen that goes through another huge room filled with these giant containers. The map calls it the dining hall. And they're like, dining hall? And Matt points out that maybe the corporation is keeping a few secrets down here because this is clearly not a dining hall.
He's also super. They're like, who are you? And he's like, I'm a police officer. And they're like, or whatever. And they're like, remember at the very beginning? And he was like,
I'm one of you.
Yeah. Basically. And they're like, they're like, that's bullcrap. And then anyway, so they're like, not.
Yeah, and he's been handcuffed this whole time. So they clearly, like, they don't believe him. They don't trust him.
They think he's full of crap.
Yeah. And so as they're all looking for survivors, Alice peers into one of these giant containers and sees flesh and tubes and IVs. Clearly something is alive inside this container. So they arrive at the corridor leading to the Red Queen's chamber. Kaplan is at the control desk while one proceeds into the corridor with three SWAT members carrying the EMP that is supposed to shut down the Red Queen. So this is kind of like, for me, this aligns with like the Matrix. I feel like anybody who didn't know what an EMP was before the Matrix, like that was your educational moment.
Yeah, you're experts by the time this movie came out.
Absolutely. You're like, oh, I know what an EMP is. I know what it does. You just use it.
I have one in my closet.
Right? I have my emergency EMP on my keychain.
Because you never know.
But this corridor is very, like, kind of iconic visually, and it gets revisited through in several of the sequels, and it's just, like, it's a short, narrow hallway that is just lit on all sides in the floor. So you're just, like, surrounded by this, you know, like, tube lighting or whatever. So it's very brightly lit. So as soon as one and the other SWAT members are inside the corridor, the Red Queen locks them in and initiates her defenses, which are, of course, lasers. Sharks with freaking lasers.
Freaking
foreheads. And they're all sliced into pieces by the lasers. Honestly, all of them, including one.
Yeah. Whenever I think of this movie, if I'm not thinking of Mila Jovovich, I'm always thinking of this scene.
Yeah.
Because it's so like, stuck
it's
in your brain.
It's pretty iconic. Yeah. And it's definitely, it's on my list of like one of my favorite scenes of this whole movie. However, it's pretty ridiculous.
It's pretty
because
ridiculous.
Because why would the Red Queen not just use her big end game laser cutter from the beginning?
Well,
why was she using this? Like, obviously it's to put action in the movie,
right?
And to make people dodge lasers. Mm-hmm. And like, that's super cool visually, but it also doesn't make any sense. And that's why I love it.
Well, and maybe that just indicates that, how sentient this Red Queen computer program is, because she's taking a little fun out of it.
Could be. So she could be enjoying herself.
She's a total sadist. Like,
you think you're going to dodge this? Well, fuck you. That's what I think.
She's like, actually, that was a pretty nice dodge, but you're not going to dodge the next one.
How about when it's a grid?
I'm going to mash potato you with an asher.
Yeah, so we lose one, which is a bummer, because the other SWAT guys that die in this scene are, like, we never even learn their names. They're like,
extras.
They're expendables.
One of
but you haven't
like
got a name tag. I'm going to just keep quoting Austin Powers throughout this. Yeah.
And, one is a medic type of person.
Yeah.
And he's like, help this, oh, crap, here's another laser.
Never mind.
Don't go into shock, soldier.
And you kind of think going into this that main security dude was like a main character.
Yeah.
Like, you think he is going in because he's doing a lot of talking. Mm. He's like the boss man. It's like, okay, this guy is going to take charge. He's going to lead us through the movie.
Yeah.
And then in the first act, his ass is patterned. Mm-hmm. Like, it was pretty awesome.
Definitely was a red herring, kind of. It's quick.
Yeah. I like that.
A little quick switcheroo.
It's fun.
So now all that's left are Kaplan, Alice, and Spence, in the, at the control desk. So they've got the corridor still between them and the Red Queen's quote unquote chamber. So now they're not the only ones left alive, but they're the only ones in, together in this group. The three of them. And, you know, Spence and Alice are the ones that are like still recovering from memory loss. And at this point, you would kind of view them as not particularly helpful or
they're just kind of like in
the situation.
Day, like, what's going on?
They're still getting their bearings. But Kaplan swears that the Red Queen's defenses are down now. He's like, I said they were down before. Ha ha, joke's on me. They weren't. But now they're definitely down. So he and Alice proceed down the corridor past the bodies.
Because Spence is like, I'm not going down there.
He's like, fuck that.
Get the fuck out of here.
They collect the EMP that the, you know, dead SWAT soldiers were carrying, and they enter the Queen's chamber.
Which, why didn't that get lasered?
Yeah, I know, right? It should have. She must. Maybe that's why, because it turned into the grid halfway down the corridor. So maybe that's why it was an essential plot point, because it's the final lasers that killed one started out as just a couple like horizontal ones, I think. And then right. And he's all ready to start jumping. Yeah. And then they, you know, shift into the grid. And that's when he's like, oh, fuck, because he realized there was no. So that must have happened after it passed the point that the EMP was in it.
I'll have to rewatch.
Yeah. Oh, no. Because I definitely haven't watched these 100 times.
Right.
Okay, so as Kaplan and Alice begin to set up the EMP, a holographic representation of the Red Queen, which was designed to look like the British programmer's daughter, appears and exhorts them to leave. She begs them not to disable primary power, but Kaplan ignores her, and when he pushes the button to activate the EMP, she delivers the iconic line, "You're all going to die down here."
It's perfect.
Perfect. Another one that, you know, that gets a lot of callbacks in the sequels. Mm-hmm. And that, the character that the Red Queen is built around evolves with the later sequels. Like, they give you a couple different stories throughout the various sequels of the basis for the Red Queen's character. And then, obviously, the revelation in the final sequel, the final chapter, is way more detailed about where she gets. So the actress that plays the Red Queen hologram is different in different movies.
Yeah,
But that line is very consistent. Mm-hmm. So the power dies, and in the room with all those giant containers, we see locking lights blinking off, which has got to be a good thing. Then the lights come back, and doors all over the facility start opening, and water rushes out of the flooded lab. At those big containers, Rain, JD, and a still handcuffed Matt await the rest of the team to return, and they start to hear noises. Rain discovers a quote-unquote survivor, a woman in a lab coat, who immediately attacks and bites Rain on the hand. JD comes to help and draws his gun on the woman, who ignores his directions to stay still, then also ignores a warning shot to her leg, so they just blow her away.
What in the fucking shit?
Yeah.
I love Michelle Rodriguez in this movie. Yeah,
she's so great in awesome. The whole franchise. Yeah. Like, she is such a clutch character.
Yeah. And then she's like, he's like, hey, I shot her. And then she's like, well, she's bitch isn't standing now or whatever. Because she's like,
yeah, she definitely got that hard.
She bit me.
So the folks from the chamber arrive. So that's Kaplan, Alice, and Spence. So after, you know, they've left the Red Queen's chamber, they're rejoining the rest of the group. And they get filled in just as JD announces that the woman's body is gone. So they, like, pumped her full of, like, 100 bullets, and now she's gone.
She's gone. How is that possible?
Yeah.
Well, she just buggered off.
Yeah, right. She's like, ouch, that itch.
Owie. We'll see ya.
So Matt and Alice note that her blood on the ground is coagulated, and Matt remarks that this is impossible because blood doesn't do that until after you're dead.
I learned that in police school.
That supports my story that I'm a police person.
Wink, wink.
Matt also uses this moment to subtly pick up a set of dropped handcuff keys, which, you know, you got to keep track of your handcuff keys, people. All right. So I put, the next new friend to arrive is walking on a broken ankle and dragging an axe. Others begin to swarm. Their faces are vile and rotting. The team is now surrounded by these.
And they're like, they're not people to, like, we can try to talk down.
No. It's very clear that we as the viewer, I'm like, okay, these are the zombies. Okay. Mm-hmm. These are the people that were down here. So the team is surrounded, and they open fire, and the gunfire triggers one of the containers to explode. As she's thrown to the ground, Alice has a recovered memory of meeting outdoors with the particular blonde we saw in the opening sequence. And she's telling the blonde that Alice can get her the virus, that she has all the security info. So this is just kind of like a little recovered memory for Alice that starts to build the backstory as the exposition continues. The team is retreating from the zombies and the fire that they started. Matt fights them off, and he finally gets his handcuffs open. There's a tense few minutes while they struggle to get the code entered to open the exit door, but when they finally do, there's nothing but more zombies on the other side that take JD.
And JD's like, this wasn't so hard. Whoa! And then zoinks! Pulled in, and it's awful. And dead. And Michelle Rodriguez, I mean, I guess they're probably really close.
Really close, yeah.
So she was, like, struggling to help him, too. And then she get bitten more. And it was so awful. Amazing
awful. And awful.
Yes.
Yeah, so they've lost JD now. And then, unbeknownst to all of these folks, something has smashed its way out of one of the containers. So now there's a monster on the loose.
It's a liquor.
Is that what it's called?
They're kind of referred to as lickers because they have those long tongues that kind of like slurp you up and kind of like, you know, knock you down and like wrap their tongues around you and pull you towards them.
They're also, kind of like a lizard.
Yeah.
In the games, they're also lickers.
Lickers.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll try to remember that term.
Shouldn't be too hard.
Because it can slurp, slurp.
Well, because I hear liquor and I think booze. So,
liquor.
L-I-C-K. Yeah, liquor. Yeah. All right, continue.
That's fair.
I'm not an alcoholic.
That's fair, yeah. No.
Okay, so now Alice and Matt get separated from the group, and the rest take cover back in the Red Queen's control center and argue. I just put this in red in my notes. They're establishing the facts of the situation. So, again, this is for our viewer, but also, you know, for them kind of wrapping their minds around what's going on. That those are the people that worked in the hive. They're dead, but that doesn't stop them from walking around. And when the team cut the power, they set the dead free. So, basically, the reason they didn't see them before was because they were enclosed.
Yeah.
They were contained.
Contained until they cut the power, which is, and then we're like, oh, the Red Queen was actually, like, right. We should have listened to her.
Yeah, but they were sent down to investigate. So would they be able to if they can't get in access to anything?
Right.
If the Red Queen just told them some shit.
Yeah, she just gave them a little bit more information.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like there's reanimated. They're reanimated corpses that hunger for flesh.
Yeah.
I have no reason to lie to you. I'm a AI.
I'm an AI.
I'm an AI.
I'm a child. Children don't lie. Weren't we just talking about that before we started? Of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
We were talking about your son who was a liar.
No. He's not a liar.
Totally not.
All right. So meanwhile, Alice finds herself in a lab filled with dog cages, screen doors all bloody and busted out. Then one of the Dobermans appears, fully zombified. So this was like, this is amazing. Like these zombie Dobermans are amazing. Like they're one of the best parts.
Definitely.
So at this point, there's just one. Alice fights it, but then more show up. She fights all of them, as well as a random human zombie, and she kicks their ass in spectacular fashion and begins to realize her capabilities as a security officer. She's like, it's one of those things where like, shit, I had no idea I could spin kick like that.
Yeah. Her, like, survival instincts just kind of clicked on.
Yeah, muscle memory. Mm-hmm.
Well, there was the one, I don't remember which kick it was, but...
Where she, like, runs up the wall across the corner. That
one, which I'm pretty sure was the dog.
Yeah.
It was against the dog. She literally trained for 3 months.
To do that.
Just to do her own stunt of running up the wall and kicking.
That's amazing.
I love her.
Yeah. She's my favorite. Yeah.
She's kind of a badass.
Yep. She is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So she beats all their asses. And then she's like, wow, she's kind of feeling herself.
Yeah.
All right. So now we cut to Matt, who's also by himself, and he's in one of the office spaces, and he seems to be looking for something. He finds the desk and ID of our blonde, again, the one from the opening scene who we saw collapse, and then she was in Alice's flashback. And her name is Lisa, and Matt obviously recognizes her. As he rifles through the papers on Lisa's desk, Lisa herself appears and seems non-threatening. She looks sick, but she doesn't seem aggressive, and she's not, like, rotting or anything at that point. But then, ultimately, she does attack Matt. And then Alice appears to the rescue and brains her with a paperweight.
She kind of looks initially like she's trying to say something.
Yeah,
and she can't get it out or something.
Yeah, she's like gray-faced and, like, kind of stumbling, but not as problematic as the other, like, obvious zombies.
Uh-huh.
And then obviously we also know already that Matt knows her. So if you know the person who's been turned into a zombie, even if you know they're zombies, it's a tale as old as all of the Resident Evil sequels. You're reluctant to kill them.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Maybe this time's different. No.
No. Maybe I could talk them down.
Stop. No. hesitating. Pull just the trigger.
Beat yeah. your child to death yeah. because they well, are zombified.
Okay, and so now Alice recognizes, after she knocks Alice, Lisa out, she recognizes Lisa as the employee that she made a deal with, and Matt reveals that Lisa was his sister. He was in on her plan to take Umbrella down by revealing their illegal genetic and viral research. Lisa was supposed to steal the virus, but she never made it out. Matt says maybe she trusted the wrong person. So Matt thinks that she got betrayed, and Alice is like, because she remembers... and of course, Matt doesn't know that Alice is the person on the inside that Lisa was working with.
It was definitely like a pull your collar, go, ooh.
And so she doesn't say anything. Yeah. But she, again, she's like, she has no memory. Like, all these memories have been wiped out. And so she's like, I don't, like,
she just
did
says
I?
It, sure.
I don't
she's
know what
like,
I did.
She's like, I could be messed up.
Am I a betrayer?
I don't know.
Yeah. Am I a good guy or a bad guy? Mm-hmm. Okay, so running again from the zombies, Matt and Alice join the rest of the team in their trapped location. Great place to you know, gather the group. As they go over their lack of options, Rain shares that they have less than an hour to get out, or they will be sealed in too. Because, you know, sealing the hive is the only fail-safe for containing the virus. So Alice goes for their only remaining chance. She boots the Red Queen back up. With a failsafe in place that they can flip a switch that will, that next time it'll fry her completely instead of just shutting her down. The Red Queen explains the T-virus and how it can reanimate dead tissue. And the only way to kill infected is severe brain trauma or spinal severing. Which, I mean, and that's pretty like standard, right? Zombie, you always have to, it's the head.
Yeah, you have to remove the head or shoot the
yeah,
head.
There's no virus where it's like, get them in the foot.
Usually.
Well, up to this point, like the team, the soldier team, security team, they're doing like chest shots at the beginning.
Yeah, because that's what you're trained to do.
And then it switches to like when they keep getting up, mm-hmm. they switch to headshots, and it's like, but then they kept going back to chest shots.
Yeah,
and it's like, okay, well at least the Red Queen just decided to explain to them yeah. now, so it makes sense.
Helps.
I was
out.
Watching you guys be bozos. So here's a tip.
Yeah. Hey, spoiler alert.
Here's a little tip.
Keep shooting them in the head. Red Queen also relates that just one bite or scratch is enough to infect you, which is bad news for Rain, mm-hmm. who is at this point looking sick.
Super chomped up.
Yeah, she's been bitten and scratched several times, and she's looking sick.
You got
like
those
she's
cold,
gray and sweaty.
Cold sweats.
Cold sweats. Yeah. she's got the DTs. Okay, so since now they essentially have a gun to the Queen's head, she helps them navigate out through utility tunnels. Before long, though, they meet more zombies. Alice kicks some more ass. They climb up onto pipes to escape, but Kaplan has now been bitten as well. They crawl along the pipes above crowds of zombies, and when the cabling can't support their weight, Kaplan gets separated and can't follow them. They're forced to leave him stranded on a duct with only one bullet left, and as they go, they hear the gunshot that they think means he's taken his own life. But then it cuts back, and we see that he fired at the zombies, telling them, "You're gonna have to work for your meal." So you're like,
aw, what a nerd.
The one-liners yeah. are great.
They're really great, which is good because the longer dialogue is sometimes not as strong.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's really, I mean, the dialogue is really limited to exposition and one-liners
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. this is an action movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? So that,
we're
that's
not here
pretty,
for like a deep thinking,
no.
you know, critically acclaimed
film. A lot of character development
film.
Here. Yeah. But we don't see arcs, a lot of character arcs. Okay, so now there's only four left, and Rain is getting sicker and sicker. I do like the part where they're like carrying her down the hall, and she goes, "When I get out of here, I think I'm gonna get laid."
Yeah, she looks like grotesque.
She looks like shit. And I think they were like, maybe take a shower first.
They're like laughing with her.
So they work their way through the labs, and Alice has a flashback again that reveals to her that there's a cure for the T-virus, the green vial from the beginning. She goes into a semi-flooded lab to find some, and then finally tells Matt that she was Lisa's contact, but she can't remember if she actually betrayed Lisa or not. Alice finds that the antivirus is all gone, and now Spence has his own flashback. He's spying on Alice meeting with Lisa, hearing Alice's price for cooperating, which was Lisa's promise that she'll bring Umbrella down. So now we know, like, Alice truly, you know, her agreement with Lisa was like, I'll help you because Alice also wanted to expose Umbrella's work. But Spence found that out as well previously, so he enacted his own plan, which was to bed Alice, steal the sera, and release the virus into the hive. And then he rushed out of the hive just in time. He was the one bumping into our coffee-carrying man, so it all comes full circle. All of this is coming back to Spence, and Alice is figuring it out for herself that he's the culprit, and they both go for a gun at the same time. Spence wins and holds the gun on all of them, but he tries to convince Alice to go with him because she's fucking hot, so that, quote, all her dreams could come true. I mean, you would not leave her behind if there was any way to avoid it, even if you were, you know, going to be holding her against her will for the rest of the, that's problematic. going on.
That's a little strange, Katie.
I'm just going to do some light Stockholm syndrome. Yeah, yeah. It will be fine.
Yeah. Just some grooming will take place. It'll be good. Everyone will be happy in the end.
I promise. All your dreams will come true.
Yay.
Because, Spence shares, the case with the sera is still on the train, so the antivirus is right there. And I put, as he villain monologues, a zombie rises from the water behind him and attacks. While he's distracted shooting at the zombie, Matt jumps on him, but Spence again regains the upper hand and leaves, locking them all in the lab. But the Red Queen...
he's like, later, jabroni. Essentially, just like, leave them.
Yeah, and they're and like, they're, and they're like,
well... Shucks. Well, crap. What do we do?
He showed us.
Oh, no.
Luckily, the Red Queen comes on the intercom and lets them know that Spence will not be getting away on the train platform.
Because they're like, what are we going to do? He's getting away with it. And they're like, zoinks. I don't think so.
Not so fast.
That's what the Red Queen says.
Yeah, she says she's been saving something. And he meets a licker, as I've recently learned they're called, on the train platform. The rest of the group gets to watch on a monitor as Spence is eaten by the liquor and as the monster mutates now that it's fed on fresh DNA. Now the queen offers them a deal. She'll release them if they kill Rain because of her advanced infection. She's like, there's, you know, there's no way, like, you can't, you can only leave if you're all uninfected. Mm-hmm. And Rain is clearly infected, and it's
and
too
good
advanced.
For the Red Queen.
Yeah, I mean,
Come on.
She's protecting the planet.
Even though she kind of let the liquor loose.
Yeah. She was saving it for us. But now the liquor appears on the other side of the glass of the room that they're in.
And starts slurping on the window.
Slurping on the, licking that old window, like doing his liquor thing. And in a dramatic moment, Alice refuses to kill Rain. She's like, no. She's like, the antivirus is right there. But Red Queen argues, as she's been infected too long, there's no guarantee the antivirus will work. And then suddenly the power goes and the door opens. Turns out it's Kaplan, who we know they thought killed himself. We know he didn't. He shows up, the hero of the moment, who triggered the failsafe and fried the Red Queen, which is why the doors were opened and now they can get out. So a foursome again now. They reach the train. Alice gets a delicious moment where she kills Spence again and gathers his case of sera. The train speeds upward and Alice injects Rain and Kaplan with the antivirus. All is quiet for a moment until the licker returns, his claws slashing through the train wall and Matt's arm.
Mm-hmm.
The licker pulls Kaplan out of the open door, so we lose Kaplan. Very sad. Then it gets inside and attacks all of them. But by the time they get it pinned, Rain has died and reanimated, so Matt has to shoot her. She staggers back into the door release button, and the licker is dropped through the floor of the train and is left behind in a ball of flames. So they've lost...
I don't actually know how the licker became on fire.
I think, like, it was how? Just the it was a, it's an electric train rail.
Dragging under there?
Yeah, dragging under there.
I was like, how?
Yeah, he was basically electrocuted to on fire.
Okay.
Got fried.
Yeah.
That was my question. I was like, how did they just create fire from nothing?
It spontaneously combusted.
They prayed to Zeus.
Yes. Zeus. The lightning bolt.
Prayed fire.
Yep, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so now it's down to Matt and Alice, because we've now lost Kaplan and Rain as well.
And everybody else.
At the end of the line, Matt and Alice walk through the entrance to the hive seconds before it seals for good. Back in the mansion, Alice collapses in grief and guilt, and Matt is trying to convince her that they finally have proof to take Umbrella down. Like, it's going to be okay. It's all worth it. Until he starts feeling something strange in the scratch on his arm from the liquor. He writhes in pain, and she goes to inject him with the antivirus when more hazmat suit guys bust through the door, always with the fucking hazmat suits.
I know.
They carry Matt off to a stretcher, and we hear a voice say, "He's mutating. I want him in the Nemesis program," as we see tiny tentacle things start worming out of the claw marks on his arm. So that's a setup for the next movie.
Mm-hmm.
So Alice is fighting off the other hazmat guys, but they overtake her, and the voice says, "I want her quarantined. Close observation. Full series of blood tests. Let's see if she's infected. Take her to the Raccoon City facility, then assemble a team. We're reopening the hive. I want to know what went on down there." And we're just like, no, they just sealed it. Why are you going to... People are so stupid. Now,
why don't you just ask these two people what went down?
Nope.
You can just ask.
Nope, we're just going to put them on the stretcher.
They do. Know.
They could tell you.
They were there.
Right?
Why would they even deign to ask the head of security? The person who is in charge of everything.
Yeah.
She's a woman.
She's a woman. Look at her. She's way too sexy to know anything.
She fainted earlier.
Yeah.
You know, you can never tell.
You can never tell.
She's just going to get hysterical.
Right? She's probably hysterical. On her period. Okay, so now in our final culminating scene of the film, that same gorgeous eye opens, and now Alice is alone in a lab setting, hooked to all kinds of tubes and IVs that she brutally yanks out of her head. It's very gross. She's dressed
It was pretty gross. You know, that was not a clean scene.
No. And again, like connecting it to the Matrix, when they're like pulling the things out of their bodies and their heads when they first get rescued from the Matrix, it's gross.
Yeah.
She's dressed in two napkins. She tries. It's literally, it's those things that they put on you at the dentist office, right? Yeah. The napkin that goes over your shirt with the metal clip that goes around your neck. Yeah. They just took two of those.
A little bit longer.
Barely. Yeah. And they put the clips on the side and they're like, it's all good.
Yeah.
What else do you need? You get some eye candy in this with this wardrobe. And personally, I've always thought that, because I don't, there was like a trend for a while, I think when like sororities and everything, where it's like their group costumes would be like, we're all different Barbies, or we're all different this. I was like, doing a group girl costume of all different Alices would be amazing. Like, you'd all have to be young and hot, which is why like the sorority thing comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
But like, whoever drew this straw was going to be cold.
Wear your napkin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. At least you'd have to wear like a flesh colored stocking
bodysuit
basically.
or so you could include just in general Mila Jovovich costumes, period.
I know you like her in the Fifth Element.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And that hair.
Mm.
My God.
Yes, I did. I did put her on my school slide for Redhead Appreciation Day last Monday.
Perfect.
Yeah, even though she's only redheaded in the first two movies.
No.
Okay, so napkin outfit. She tries to see through a two-way mirror in the room that she's in. She's screaming to be let out, but all that's on the other side is a lurking shadow walking by. She shorts out the key card reader on the door and finds her way outside,
convenient.
Only to... What?
Convenient.
Yeah, it's super easy. You just take a bloody... jackport and just run it through a key card and
totally
out of it
works like that.
Yep, 100%.
You're like clink clank thick. Okay,
she's like, got it.
I got it.
Joke's on you. Outside, she finds the city destroyed. Fires, crashed vehicles, newspapers hanging with the headline, "The Dead Walk."
The Dead Walk.
Yeah, so she does the only rational thing. She gets a shotgun from an abandoned cop car and prepares to kick some more ass.
Perfection.
And that is the end. The closing scene of her in the middle of a destroyed, abandoned Raccoon City street.
And it has, like, the music. Like,
such good music. Like techno, like, techno grunge. I don't know. It was.
It's a great setup.
Yeah. And, it flows seamlessly into the first sequel.
Yeah.
But anyway, that...
It's a perfect transition.
That is Resident Evil, the first. Okay, so we always ask, do we think it's scary? I mean, that... I don't know. I think that with this theme, we're talking more about, like, the elements that connect it to this viral horror subgenre. And, like, does it... my question would be, is this a horror movie? Like, what's the balance between the different genres that it kind of marries?
Like a horror action?
Horror, action, sci-fi. Like, those are all, you know, like, those are subgenres that mix together in different ratios in different films. And so, like, where does this one land?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even, you can't even really compare it to kind of a Hereditary, Conjuring, because they're maybe classified sort of similarly, but they're not at all.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't really make sense.
Right.
I don't know. That's an interesting question.
I think it's like 60% action.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I say it's action forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I would combine sci-fi horror into the next 40%.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to split those up, I'd probably say horror, maybe 30%, and then 10% sci-fi.
Agreed. Yeah, because they don't, like, it's not a thinker. They're not going deep into the scientific element of it. It's just like, there's a virus.
Yeah, and maybe even go 5%.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not super prompt. It's just like, that's just what happened, and you need to suspend your disbelief and believe this is what's happening.
So that you can watch this incredibly gorgeous woman kick ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So then, what are the elements that qualify as horror? Like, what goes into that 30-35% that is horror?
Probably.
Aside from the liquor.
Like, the reanimated corpses, their grotesque faces, and them coming after you, and there are just so many of them, and the feeling of, like, claustrophobia, because there's definitely a lot of claustrophobia in that movie. Especially, before even the... there's any kind of zombies in the kind of possessed elevator that's doing their own thing, kind of throwing people back and forth. I mean, that's kind of a realistic.
Yeah. There's a whole horror movie about being stuck in an elevator.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she's trying to squeeze out. And then we know how that ends. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that part is definitely would be considered horrors. The swarming. It's very Romero. Just all these zombies coming after you. And like, you open a door and there's more coming out and pouring out. And you're just kind of overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And I feel like these zombies, they're a little bit different than your typical ones because they're using props. One's carrying an axe at
you. That's true.
It's not just mindless, stupid...
scratching, clawing.
I want your brains, and I'm super slow. Like, some of these are a little bit faster.
Mm-hmm. Romero, they had some props sometimes, too. They were, like, carrying, like a shovel, other things. Like, in Night of the Living Dead, the daughter in the basement, like, stabs her mom to death and then eats her. Like, that's...
I guess that's true. There's some, I forgot about that.
There's some, like... you see elements of that sometimes, but that's always my biggest, like... gripe is when I see zombies carrying stuff. I'm like, you scamps shouldn't be doing
manipulating
things. But it happens a lot, though.
But this T virus is different than like a normal zombie thing, too, because it reanimates you and gets you going again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not just because I don't want to do a whole comparison to like the games
minutia.
Or anything, but in the games, and I don't remember if it was in the future movies too.
And the tyrant
when
you're is
doing,
the tyrant
when
virus.
You use the T virus, it like normal people just get reanimated, right? But like higher intelligence and like people that are just, I mean, I guess you could say just better, like the super smart, they get smarter and they get more deadly. And it's not just like you turn into a zombie. So
it's
a little
different. Well,
you have to
die to become, like you can be infected,
right.
But as long as you're still living, you're not a zombie.
Right, right? But most people will just eventually die from it and then turn into...
Angela Ashford in the second one, like she, because in the second one, you know, is where they present the idea of why it was developed, that the doctor that developed it was because he had a genetic disorder that led him to lose the ability to walk, and his daughter inherited that disorder, so he developed the T virus so that he could use it to treat her.
Basically enhance and regrow.
Yeah, the cells in her body that were damaged by her genetic disorder were... treated by the T virus, and they always talk throughout the whole franchise about Alice bonding with it on a cellular level, and that like she reacted to it inexplicably in a way that nobody else did. And then, of course, finally in the final movie, we get a completely different explanation for why that's the case.
Mm-hmm. But also, that is also a movie only thing.
Yes,
in the games, it is an evil creation on purpose.
Okay.
In the movies, it's more altruistic where it's...
And then somebody misappropriated it.
Right, yeah. Which you could totally see happening in real life.
Yeah.
In Romero's universe, the godfather of the zombie genre, there are zombies who are dead and because they are, like, maybe more intelligent or, like, really were in life, had... you know, a lot of charisma or other things can, like, rally other zombies to, like, go into a certain spot. Maybe that's
so they
weaker,
retain some
weaker
of that.
In a city. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, they have some kind of retention and they're able to, like, kind of, like, use stuff. Sometimes they, like, use props and, like, rocks and other things to, like, break down a barrier or, like, you know, infiltrate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in that world, you're like, well, that's only this way. I'm like, well, if... Romero says that, I kind of have to, like, go with that, you know, but I do have that gripe still. Like, it kind of bothers me. Mm-hmm. But I think that always in these movies, there's always the feeling of, like, you're running for your life. Creatures are chasing you. It's not just zombies, but other, like, enhanced creatures that are just repugnant and gross and can like rip you to pieces. And then you're trapped. And then people around you are making stupid decisions all around you and like being like, I'm going to run out of here. And you're like, don't open the door, stupid. So then also that brings in the idea of people that you can't trust around you too. Mm-hmm. That in your survival situation,
yeah,
which is part of what I love about the virus theme in horror movies. Mm-hmm. Also, it was like the human element besides what's the obvious, like the monsters. There's also the people you have to deal with that makes it like all worse or better, just depending.
Well, and that's exactly, I mean, like we point out for anybody that's being like, we're talking so much about Romero and Night of the Living Dead, that isn't part of this subgenre because the virus or the zombies in Night of the Living Dead were created by a meteor or a moon rock.
It's like landed. A bacteria or virus on it, or something on the moon rock.
Yeah, that came to Earth and infected people. So it doesn't really fall under this umbrella, but that...
Umbrella, huh?
But no, she's shaking. She's like, why am I with these yahoos? But this franchise, you know, like to not, because normally, you know, I'd love to spend another like 6 hours with all of the sequels. Mm-hmm. But it's good to know from a perspective of someone who's played the game, Victor, that they really ran with the story and created all kinds of elements later films that weren't inspired by content in the original video game. Because the one thing that I always wondered if it was an element from the video game was the Nemesis program. Because that's what they reference at the end of the first movie. And in the second movie, we find that because Matt was scratched by the liquor, not scratched by a regular zombie, that he gets infected and he mutates and becomes like this kind of super, like not fully mindless, because we do then end up seeing his awareness come back and he attacks the bad guys rather than Alice. But he's lost most of his humanity and become this kind of like powerful creature, not like an out of control monster, but a mutated creature, like humanoid.
Nemesis is a big part of the game.
I figured that would be the case.
Because like I have a whole thing about like, not a whole thing, but a small thing about the differences.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay, so where is it? Let's see.
I have some fun facts while he's finding his.
Okay. Thing.
I thought it was cute. So, the Dobermans, the little zombie donks, they got a lot of makeup and prosthetics and other things, but they kept like slurping it up because they thought it was so like, you know, delicious. So the makeup and effects people had to deal with that. And I thought that was really funny. Oh,
they're like, licking their makeup off.
But yeah, because it's like sweet, yummy little...
They made it out of peanut butter.
I don't know. But I was like laughing so hard. And then Mila Jovovich did these movies because her brother was a huge Resident Evil video game guy. So she was like, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And then...
it was more like she said, if anyone ever makes this, I am going to be in it.
Michelle Rodriguez said that too. It's her agent.
What did you say?
Mila Jovovich did it because her brother was part of the movie. But Michelle Rodriguez as well was like, told her agent, if anyone makes this video game into a movie, I have to be part of it. So
because she's a badass.
Yeah, I mean, there's like fans in the cast who are like excited, I think. So that makes it really fun too, to know that they're like all in and committed to it, rather than just like, oh, here's just a paycheck.
It's just a job.
They're just like, oh, this is going to be really fun.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
Yeah. I feel that way when I see like not even necessarily horror movies, but when you see like a younger performer making a film with like some like iconic, like older, like respected, accomplished actor. Mm-hmm. And I just always imagine that younger performer just not being like starstruck necessarily, but just like the idea of them having an opportunity, like, you know, they're working to build an acting career and then they get to like make a movie with Pacino. Like I think we might've talked about this with, PI. Devil's Advocate.
Oh, yeah.
Of like that idea of being like a young, relatively new actor getting your start and then being like getting to work with like somebody who maybe is the reason you got into acting.
Yeah.
That's always like cool to think of it, like the humanity behind the performers, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that connection. And then also seeing movies where maybe they wouldn't have been made unless a very, very prominent actor or actress became part of it, like, kind of, like, advocated. Like, Hereditary, for example. You know, she... who was the main actress? I'm
Toni blanking. Collette.
Toni Collette. She, like... attached her name to it. She's like, I believe this movie, it should be made. And then everyone started signing on. But I'm like, what would have happened if this amazing, insane movie wasn't believed in by somebody who is like such an amazing actor or actress? So what are
like,
your...
And like Henry Cavill with The Witcher. That's how that'll happen to
okay, oh, so yeah. What are you going
to... You two don't know.
I know. I like, I watched it with you. Yeah. That's me supporting you.
Okay. So there's a few differences here. A primary one is that the movies really prioritize action over horror.
Yeah.
Like, the games are horror games.
Oh, really?
And yes, there's action because you need to survive.
You need to punch things.
But yes, it's like things. Very much horror related.
Because you're going into a mansion and, and there's like gross stuff revealed in different places when you go in that are trying to kill you.
So, like Castlevania.
Sort of, yeah.
And this is like more of an overarching thing with the movies, is that in the movies, like, the world basically comes to an end at some point.
Yeah.
And things are going on that is like post-apocalyptic. In the games, the world hasn't ended yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're still fighting and trying to manage society.
Okay.
So it hasn't quite gotten to that part yet. In the movies, zombies are actually weaker than those in the games. Like, they're really, really strong and powerful in the games.
Okay.
Everything about Alice is exclusive to the movies.
Oh.
She is not a character.
Really?
In the games. No.
Oh.
They made that part.
That character was entirely created for the film.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you kind of need somebody that you're rooting for.
Yeah. You know, but I assume that, like, you know, when you would, if you were playing the game, then, I mean, again, I'm going to show my complete lack of words because, like, you select a character to be when you start playing the game.
No.
And so I thought that she would have been, like, one of your choices, or maybe you're, like Tomb Raider.
Right.
Where, like, you are Lara Croft in the game.
Right, yeah. No, you are not Alice.
Okay.
Yeah. And then from the beginning, Anderson chose not to use the game's characters or stories so that he could make up this entire thing on his own.
Well, good for him, because I like what he came up with.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not upset about it.
Yeah.
I mean, with the exception of the movie that was released only a handful of years ago, Resident Evil Raccoon City, which is very, very true to the video game.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But that also wasn't made by him.
No, not by him. But it was. I think it was people liked it or didn't, or they were like upset that it didn't really have much to do with this world with Alice and the others.
But that
everything
mean,
else.
The final,
that
the was sixth movie,
what it was
closed the book. I mean, like, they ended it with a cutesy little, oh, she's gonna continue fighting or whatever. But the final chapter really was the final chapter, and not just because Mila Jovovich was done with the franchise. Like, they ended the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, like, they released the antivirus into the world.
Yeah.
So that, you know, problem solved.
Yeah. Hopefully it'll...
It's over.
So anybody that, like, saw another one coming and thought it was going to be a continuation of the Alice story wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. But also, Lance Reddick is in that show. It's amazing because he's amazing.
Yeah.
So those are my differences.
Okay.
But I have some other stuff, unless one of you two wants to talk about something.
No, I mean, I was going to do just like a quick check-in of the sequels.
Sure.
Just off the top of my head, because I know if I had written any notes for it, it would have been way too much. The second one is Apocalypse, and it basically like immediately follows, not immediately, but close to immediately follows the story in the original, and it's basically like Raccoon City now is infected, and all of the uninfected in Raccoon City are fighting back against that, and we get the introduction of Jill Valentine's character and also Carlos in that film, and they both are characters that continue later on into the franchise. Then the third one is Extinction, which is the one that I kind of look at it. It's like a gunslinger, like Western thing, because at this point the virus has now infected the entire world and the world is dead. And it's kind of set in the Midwest in the U.S. Alice has gone rogue by herself because she doesn't want to get, you know, anyone else, the people around her hurt. And so she has to go stay off the grid. And so she's on her motorcycle. She's got a very gunslinger costume in this, like the long duster coat and the, you know, the cross belts with her ammo and everything. That one...
Continuing to be a badass.
Continuing to be a badass. Yeah. Carlos returns in that one, and that's the film where we introduce Ali Larder's character, Claire.
Yeah.
And she continues to be prevalent in the later sequels. And that's also the one that... Oh, what's not Aaliyah... what's the... oh, anyway, it's some musical artist was in that one, and she was very cute. But that has the amazing scene where they go to Vegas, mm-hmm. and, like, the desert has taken Vegas back. And so, like, there's just, like, the Eiffel Tower and the Statue of Liberty, like, poking out of the sand. So that was a pretty cool setting from the second one, or, I mean, from the third one. And the fourth one was Afterlife, because at the end of the third one, Alice finds the facility full of clones of herself, mm-hmm. That they've been using for testing. And so then she, like, kind of rallies that army of clones at the beginning of the fourth movie, Afterlife, to attack the headquarters in Tokyo, the Umbrella headquarters in Tokyo. And that's a pretty amazing sequence of, like, just 100 Alices mm-hmm. fighting Umbrella. Mm-hmm. And that one, that was actually my favorite because the majority of the movie takes place in this prison in L.A., mm-hmm. where she and it's the incredibly handsome, dreamy man playing a pro basketball player. But there's like it's one of those settings where you have just a handful of random survivors with different personalities. And so you're seeing how it's one of those like kind of character studies of how different people reacted to the circumstances.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen all of them, but it's been like maybe I watched it when it came out. Mm-hmm. When it came out, or I kind of partially paid attention. Well,
they can kind of start to blend together because there's, I mean, there are discrete stories from each film, but then it's always just Alice fighting Umbrella, basically. Yeah,
pretty much.
But I loved the LA prison one. And then at the end of that one, they've kind of taken control of this giant freighter ship in the ocean outside of L.A. with all of these survivors on it. And they think, oh, yay, everything's going to be OK now. And then Umbrella ships or helicopters are descending on them at the end of that one. And so then the beginning of the fifth one, which is Retribution, is that sequence of the helicopters attacking the ship. And then, you know, and then the last one was the final chapter, brings it back home to Raccoon City. And you get like this kind of, it's a little out of left field, but it's like kind of the only way you could tie up the whole story is Alice discovering that she is a clone, that she wasn't an actual human being that was born of parents and lived and that she was made a copy of Alicia Marcus, the daughter of the Umbrella doctor. And this is where like they kind of change that backstory of the T-virus because she actually is supposed to have had progeria rather than the Angela in the second one. That was the story of why the T-virus developed at that point.
Yeah.
But basically, it's like this very happy ending where, like, you know, Alice is the woman Alicia could never be, but she didn't have a childhood. So then Alicia downloads all her childhood memories before she dies and gives them to Alice. And now Alice is a whole person. Very happy ending.
Yay.
Oh, and also I skipped her in Retribution. The fifth one is where they're underwater in Russia, where they, like, Umbrella has taken over the old submarine pens under, like, in Russia for all of their staging facilities so that they could film the T-virus being used to attack different cities around the world. So, like, you want to sell it to the Chinese, then show it attacking Tokyo. If you want to sell it to the Russians, show it attacking New York City. Mm-hmm. And so that really felt like a video game to me because she's, like, literally moving through these different... replicas of these cities, so it felt like video game levels.
Right, right.
But that was a pretty fun element too. So they are all like there's actual like creativity in developing the content of mm-hmm. each of the sequels. They're fun in their own ways, and they have different styles, and they do each have, you know, a kind of story. I will say that so Tom had to watch all of them with me this time around. He had never seen any of them. Ugh. He thought they were trash.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was surprised because he's watched so many bad horror movies with me. Mm. And he seemed more surprised at how much I love these movies than he is by how much I love all of the terrible Jason sequels. I'm like, I don't understand. Like, these are better. They may not be great. They're better than all the Jason sequels, though. Yeah. Like, you got to give me that.
They're all bad.
Yeah, it's all bad and okay. So good.
Yeah, they're good. Fun.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a franchise that I love, but I know is not amazing.
Yeah.
Like, the first one, I think, is incredible.
Okay.
Like, I think the, just, like, building this world that they built was awesome. And then it gets more ridiculous. That's just how it works.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like,
you all the seasons. Yeah, keep up in the
ante. Yeah. like we've talked about with True Blood, where it's, like, the vampire season, the first one, it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then it is witches. Then it is, you know, the werepanthers. And then it's like, come on. And every season is something more ridiculous. And there's witches and the magic and like all this shit. It's mm-hmm. like, come on. Let's,
you strayed, you know, too far.
I love the first season. I love the rest, but it got more absurd as it went on. No, it's kind of the same thing.
Go back to the roots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fun.
It is. It's so fun.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to make sense, and, you know, it doesn't.
But it does, know. Mostly. I mean, there's a couple.
I have some things that don't make
okay,
sense.
Okay, let's hear
the first one.
Oh, from the just from the,
just
first,
from the
one.
First one.
All right.
Yeah. I didn't go that hard.
We don't have that much time.
Yeah, we don't have time for that. But, like, you know, I mean, this is totally just, like, funny. Doesn't make sense for this first one. Like, there's a scene in the very beginning, in the first act, where Spence gives his jacket to Alice.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember that scene?
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's a woman-sized jacket.
Well,
it fit her perfectly.
That's how Spence dresses.
No. It would not have fit him whatsoever. And it's like, and that's just kind of ridiculous.
But, I mean, it does. He takes it off before he gives it to her, so it did fit him.
Sure.
And she doesn't keep it on that long.
Yeah. The laser grid thing, like I said earlier, was like, okay, why didn't you just do the pattern in the beginning? But maybe she was just having fun, like you said. Who knows? She is, you know, AI. But the main one to me in this movie was, you know, the part where where it does a flashback showing how he grabbed the T-virus and then released it, threw it, and then escaped out of the sealed clean room that is sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a ventilation shaft for the air to escape, even though it's a sealed room where they deal with air pathogens.
Interesting. Yeah.
Where it shouldn't have gone to the rest of the that's the whole reason you have seal rooms.
Interesting.
Like clean rooms, you know?
Yeah.
So like that.
That's a pretty big plot hole.
It's like, come on.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, he should have showed him throwing it in the hallway.
Yeah, somewhere. Exactly. It's a very simple fix. Like, when he's passing by the dude with the coffee that he spills out of his hand, oh, I just dropped the T-virus right there in the freaking lobby. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, like, you threw it in the sealed room, the clean room, that shouldn't.
See, now I want to go back and watch that moment to actually track the space.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, when he's leaving, you can see that it's a double door seal room where they're doing experiments.
Yeah.
And then it escapes into the air right where the air goes out to the rest of the building. So, like, that type of stuff where it's like,
okay, I mean, you're being very nitpicky.
Well, is that one nitpicky? But maybe. But I have some fun facts to counter the naysaying. I don't know if you two noticed this or not, but the name Alice was never spoken in the film. You don't actually know that her name is Alice unless you saw the credits.
Yeah, and that's why when I was writing my recap, with a lot of them, like, they eventually reveal Matt's name, but not for a really long time. And with Alice, I was like, just in my recap, I was just calling her the girl, the hottie, the redhead, whatever, until I realized, like, they're never going to tell us her name. So I went back and added it.
Yeah. Which I think is pretty funny. Also, this movie is James Cameron's guilty pleasure.
That's amazing.
Fun fact. So, Paul Anderson actually wanted Gwyneth Paltrow to play Alice.
Ew, no!
And I'm very glad.
Fuck that.
That she declined.
Ew.
The job. And
Mila
came.
Boo.
In. Yeah. It was pretty weird.
I don't even like that piece of information being in my brain.
You reject it out of hand.
Yeah. I can just see her being like, and pushing something away.
Get out of here, I said. Get out.
Yeah. Oh, no! I don't even like her as Pepper Potts. And, like, they tried to make Pepper a sort of a badass at the with Endgame.
Powers, yeah.
But even that was a reach.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, in Iron Man 3, she gained her powers.
Well, yeah, but then she lost them.
Yes.
Yeah. But then it was just having her in a suit. In Endgame, they just put her in a suit, and that was the only thing that gave her any strength at anything. And of that, I'm like, ugh, get out of here, Pepper.
Yeah, right.
You don't belong with the Girl Squad.
The poster art was actually designed by a fan who won a contest.
Awesome.
And they used his poster art for, like, everything.
Amazing.
All the marketing material, which is pretty awesome. It actually was not originally called just Resident Evil.
Really?
It was originally called Resident Evil Ground Zero.
Not great timing.
But then 9/11 happened during pre-production.
Oh.
So they removed the words Ground Zero.
That's lucky.
Yes.
That was a lucky... dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad. Bad idea.
Yeah.
So, it's like the diet pill that came out in the 80s, and it's called AIDS.
Yeah.
Like, I'm aiding you in your weight loss, and then HIV/AIDS came out, and they're like... Well, people became aware of it, and they're like, "Guess that this isn't working.
We're gonna rebrand.
Bad timing."
Yeah. And then, so speaking of Romero, he was originally tapped to write and direct the movie.
He didn't have time for that nonsense.
Yeah, I don't know if he declined or if he just like scheduling, time stuff, scheduling, whatever. The score. Do you know who did the score, my dear?
No.
Your favorite guy that you don't like anymore. Because he's Manson? A terrible person, yes.
Really?
Marilyn Manson does the score for this movie.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, but I like his art.
I know.
But he's so...
so problematic.
Such a piece
problematic.
Of shit.
Yes.
It's one of those, the artist and the man, they are, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Appreciating the art.
And then my final one is that the studio did not think that female heroes, or zombies for that matter, would sell. Turns out you make it Mila Jovovich and Michelle Rodriguez in the first, and then you keep adding a hottie every
a
other
badass
movie.
Who doesn't take any crap,
and they're just badasses like that. People love it.
Yeah, like the basically all except for Carlos, and he wasn't in all of them. Like all of the leaders in these films are all women.
Yeah,
it's Alice, it's Jill Valentine, it's Claire, it's Michelle. Well, Michelle Rodriguez, she ends up being bad in one of the later ones, but it's her clone. It's not her.
Yeah, it's not her fault.
Yeah, but that final. It's at the end of Retribution where. It's Jill Valentine's been taken over by Umbrella, and then it's one of the Rain clones, and then Alice all fighting it out like in this massive like girl, and Michelle Rodriguez, like, she injects herself with like the whatever little bug thingy, and she's fighting two men by herself and like kicking their asses. So yeah, it's very girl power forward.
I mean, it turns out guys just want to be beat up by women. I'm not against it.
Just give me a little slap.
Yeah.
Right in the
mouth.
Harder.
Yeah. And then another thing is like I wrote down like two of my favorite parts of the entire movie.
All
right. One was the ridiculous laser defense system. Mm-hmm. Like that was just so over the top and amazing. And I loved it. And then it was the liquor with the train. Like that whole ending sequence was like, I was just like, yes, this is so good. Like he's so powerful and like they're just getting fucked up. And then Michelle Rodriguez comes back as a zombie. Now they're fighting, you know, everything.
Yeah.
So those are my fun facts, my things that didn't make sense, and my favorite parts.
Very nice.
My favorite part, or well, yours too, I think are included in mine also, but I like it when, Alice is saying goodbye to Rain, and then she's like, oh, now I have to shoot her. And then she's like, I'm not dead yet. Give me back my gun.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was pretty hilarious.
So I'm like, oh, mwah, chef's kiss. I love that part. Yeah. But, I mean, there are a lot of other parts that are great, but that was, like, just fun little moments that I enjoy from that movie.
Yeah.
So, anyway, good talk. We could talk about this movie and franchise for ages.
Yeah.
I will actually watch, because I haven't watched, maybe I did actually start it, the Resident Evil Raccoon City, and that's what
we watched
the
first couple episodes. We
no, not it. A show. It's not a show. It's a movie, and it came out in 2022.
Oh, that, yeah.
And it was based on the video game, and it's scene for scene, a lot of it is the video game.
Did you play the video game?
So I think I played it for like a little bit minimally, and it made me too anxious. Oh. And I kept dying. Because I'm really slow with I can do like video games on the PC, but I'm slow with like, I never played, you know, systems consoles. On consoles. So, but I saw some of it when other people played it around me, because there was a lot of storytelling and stuff like that. So it was kind of fun to watch. But I actually haven't watched it. I would like to watch it, but and I heard people who are like fans of the video game were like, it was pretty good actually. Yeah. And the filmmaker said he took a lot of, you know, idea, you know, had a lot of inspiration from John Carpenter, like widescreen shots of like, oh, cool. And seeing like creatures in the background and other things and like big reveals. So I'm curious to watch it. Yeah. So and
sorry for the dogs barking in the background, if you can all hear that.
Yeah,
that's okay.
And I think to bring it back around to the theme and this like horror movies based on viral infections. And then, so we've talked about The Crazies. Next time, we're going to be talking about 28 Days Later. After that, we were looking at Bird Box. And so I think that, this one, people might dispute that this should be on our podcast, because I think we agree it's not really a horror movie. But I think that it does. I mean, the fact that it has zombies, that's a classic horror element.
And creatures. Other creatures that can kill you. Zombie creatures.
And that's something that they also expand throughout the sequels. There's like more and different creatures and people getting infected in new ways as they continue to mess with the virus and everything. And that's like the, you know, going back to what you had said earlier about the people, the survivors being dangerous as well, not just the zombies being dangerous. And the contrast with Romero's Night of the Living Dead movies is that one of the horrifying elements of all of this is that almost all of these movies, the virus was created by people, like by bad people doing bad things.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's something that you can legitimately find frightening.
Yeah.
And as we're joking, not joking about, like, could absolutely really happen. In our lifetimes.
Yeah.
You know? And so that, if that's not horrifying, I don't know what is.
Right. And I did make my homework to look up movies that have come out post, like, COVID. Past COVID, but I totally forgot. So I would like to probably do that. I am curious to see if people are like, no, too soon.
Yeah.
Or if that's actually happening. But we do have still shows that are in production, still continue to be in production post COVID, like any Fear of the Walking Dead. Well, not, you know, Walking Dead universe type of shows that are taking place post COVID. Yeah. But those are stories that are continuation that happen.
Right. Became, it's an established world, very established. And circumstances.
Yeah. And like the comics came out in 2004 or something, a long, long time. Well, it's been a while when that source material started to come. Yeah. To come out, but
yeah, so next time it'll be 28 Days Later.
Yep.
It's another, you know, man-made virus, and it's
the rage virus
and the ramifications of that poor decision-making part.
Yeah. Made by Danny Boyle, amazing, and it was Cillian Murphy's big first movie.
So you get to stare at his ginormous gorgeous eyes the whole time.
Oh, yeah. But that'll be something to watch. Hopefully you have it and own it, because it's not available anywhere. Yeah, apologies.
It is a hard one to find.
Anyway, good chat. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Victor, for being here.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye.
Bye.